Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, world. Welcome once again to Tuesday Talk with Key West Lou. I am your host, Louis Patron. I have a lot to cover tonight, so let's get right to it. I'm going to be a bit critical tonight, too, more so than I normally am, so bear with me. I want to talk first about Donald Trump. I have been critical of him. I'd say extremely critical of him. I have spoken poorly about him on the show and in my blog and probably my newspaper column. I didn't see him a man fit for the presidency. I have described him as a buffoon. Now I see maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. Here's why I think maybe I'm wrong. And let me explain it to you. Donald Trump, it was announced this morning. I picked it up first on Morning Joe, and then it was in the other news releases. Donald Trump, 19 months before 9/11, wrote a book called The America We Deserve. And in that book, he said, we've got to be prepared for terrorist attacks. There is going to be another terrorist attack. Not only did he say that, then this is going to blow you out. He suggested that the one leading the attack would be none other than Osama bin Laden. Yep, he said this 19 months before 9/11. Why, he hasn't bragged about it. And somebody had to bring it up. Nobody brought it up. I don't understand. Or maybe he set everyone up knowing that someone would find it. Be that as it may, it gives me perhaps a different insight, different thoughts about this man. He saw that we were going to be attacked by terrorists. This is while he's an entertainer, a contractor, a casino man. He writes a book and says we're going to have another terrorist attack and this guy Osama bin Laden will be involved. That impresses me no end. I've got to tell you, it impresses me no end. Maybe when I call him a buffoon, it's his delivery I don't like. Who knows? I don't know anymore. But let me say to you, let me read to you two paragraphs from the book. Quote, I really am convinced we're in danger of the sort of terrorist attacks that will make the bombing of the Trade Center look like kids playing with firecrackers. No sensible analyst respects this possibility, and plenty of them, like me, are not wondering if but when it will happen. Again, no sensible analyst rejects this possibility, and plenty of them like me are not wondering if but when it will happen. And I further quote, one day we're told that a shadowy figure with no fixed address named Osama bin Laden is public enemy number one, and the United States jet fighters lay waste to his camp in Afghanistan. He escapes back under some rock, and a few new cycles later, it's on a new enemy and new crises. That's just two comments from his book, two quotes. I never heard of Osama bin Laden, with one exception, before 9/11. And that goes back, my God, this has to be the Nicaragua hearings or something during Reagan's administration? Ollie North, Colonel Ollie North, this is in the 80s probably. He is telling, on national television, he's telling a congressional committee that he was afraid because of the work he was doing in the Middle East that someone was going to do him and his family bad, evil. So he had to have a fence built around his house, a high fence, to protect his family. And someone said, well, who is this guy? And he looked at them with his face as if, you don't know? And he said, Osama bin Laden. And very few on that committee knew who Osama bin Laden was. The name was mentioned. They didn't even pursue it, the congressman. That's the first time I heard it. That's back in the 80s. And then I didn't hear it again until after 9/11. Okay, moving on here. The House of Representatives. Republicans disorganized. They can't run their own House. They're in control of the House. How the hell are they going to run a government? But this week, Congress is back. There's two big issues. Elect a speaker and pass a balanced budget. Are they capable? of either or both. Tonight, just before my show went on, I heard Paul Ryan at 8:30 announced that he had appeared before the Republican caucus, laid out his four conditions for serving as Speaker, and the group apparently is going to take them under consideration and let him know later in the week whether he is acceptable. I think Paul Ryan is out of his mind taking the job. He's presidential timber someday, not now, and I don't think in 4 years, but he ran for vice president, if you recall. He's a serious-minded individual. I don't agree with him all the time. He's a conservative. But this poor guy, they're saying he's the man. Now, I don't believe those 40-some-odd representatives, congressmen, who are part of the far right here, the Tea Party group, are going to be any more cooperative with him than they were with John Boehner. So I think he's an idiot for taking the job, unless I'm wrong and he does a good job. We'll see. I want to share with you, though, something I read this week. There's a gentleman by the name of Mike Lofgren, L-O-F-G-R-E-N. He spent 28 years working for in the Republican congressional group. He was always a Republican appointee, whether he was part of he worked for a committee, he was an aide to somebody. He was always there working in Congress, respected. He was like a civil servant working in Congress, respected man, no question about it, 28 years, retired in 2011. After he retired, he wrote an essay entitled, and I quote, "Goodbye to All That. Reflections of a GOP operative who left the cult." I repeat, goodbye to all that. Reflections of a GOP operative who left the cult. I'm just going to give you some of his comments. If you can find the essay, you can find it easily on the internet. You should read it. But some of the comments by him in the essay. He said, major parties are, and I quote, rotten captives to corporate loot. Rotten captives to corporate loot. Regarding the far right, the Tea Party, he said, and I quote, it's filled with lunatics. It's filled with lunatics. I agree. Regarding gridlock, he said, and I quote, legislating has become war minus shooting. Again, I repeat that. Legislating has become war minus the shooting, something one could have observed 80 years ago in the Reichstag of the Weimar Republic. And what's he talking about? Adolf Hitler's people did the same thing in the early 1930s. They disrupted German government. They were part of the procedure. Some were elected. And by so doing, screwing everything up, they were able to bring Hitler to power. Good observation. I want to talk about the NCAA, the NCAA, and right now the charges that probably are going to end up being brought against Rick Pitino and Louisville University. How do I say this? Rick Pitino is coach of the basketball team at Louisville. He has been a professional coach and a college coach of other schools. He is a giant in college coaching. He is a Hall of Famer. He's in an exclusive club. He's one of the greats out there. And I happen to know him personally, not that well. I've run into him. Hi, Lewis. How are you doing, Rick? And that's it. However, they're investigating right now, the NCAA, the years 2010 to 2014, where it is claimed that sex parties were held, all right, sex parties were held for players and recruiters, recruiting kids who were being recruited for the basketball team, sex parties, strippers and hookers, and sometimes teenage girls, and they were paid to entertain the basketball players and those they were seeking to recruit. Now, we had a problem with Jim Boeheim at Syracuse, who is a very good friend. Another great in basketball, college basketball, a Hall of Famer. And what he basically was charged with in the final analysis, and this had to do with playing a student who didn't have the grade right, or a professor had given him a grade, it was all screwed up, and some kid had approached a girl, one of his players, several years before someplace. He wasn't aware of either thing. No one questioned that. The investigators didn't question that he had knowledge, but they said he was responsible because he was number one. He was the head coach and his number one. It's his responsibility that to know everything that goes on with the basketball program, with his players. And for that, he was severely penalized, as you're well aware. Well, I think that, you know, because you're number one, and you should know, that's too high of a standard, okay? And that's the same standard, by the way, that's going to be Rick Pitino's going to be held to. And I don't think if Rick Pitino did not know, as he claims, okay, and you may think he does know. I don't know, but the proof will come out. It doesn't make sense to me. If he did not know, he should not be penalized, nor should the school. And it's just wrong. And here's some of the things that if we're a sex crazy nation. We are sex crazy and have been. No question about it. I mean, everything, major legislation for the last 50 years has to do indirectly with sex. Abortion, birth control, okay, things like that. 85% of the internet is people watching porn. 85%. We watch movies, we have TV, and things get sexier and sexier. Women are dressing more and more blatantly. Men dress the same today as they did 50 years ago. Women wear less and less clothes and more provocative clothes. Because this is the way our mentality is in this country. We are sex-driven. So I say this. If you're going to chase a basketball coach and make him responsible because he's the coach, and not because he knew what was going on, then let's look at some other things in college. What about the professor and the female student having sex, okay? What about the homosexual professor having sex with one of his students? Or the lesbian professor having sex with a student? This goes on in our universities. Everyone knows it, okay? What about fraternity parties? They're sex orgies, many of these parties that they have on weekends. Whether it be they bring someone in, they bring prostitutes in, or they bring one or two people in to entertain, to have sex with 20 or 30 fraternity members, a gangbang. And they do this sometimes with just a college girl who's willing to participate. What about them? Most fraternities, I won't say every, are doing this on college campuses across the United States. Do you see anybody ever, you know, contesting that, what's going on? Do you see a college president getting canned because this is going on his campus? Do you even see a college president being charged? Let me put this in a different sense. The banks in this country, the CEOs, the major people in the banks, in 2007 and 2008 committed so many crimes, did so many bad things, they almost brought this country down. We had one of the worst recessions ever. Millions of people lost their homes because of the games the banks played. To this day, not one person, one high-level person, president, vice president, has been indicted or lost his job. Now, if we're going to apply it to a college coach, basketball coach, we should apply it to a bank president. Even if the bank president didn't know, and they all knew, but even if the bank president didn't know that the people below him were screwing around, he should be held responsible, though. He's the bank president. We should charge him and put him in jail after we give him a fair trial. Another thing that galls me about these NCAA investigations, and this is something you may not be aware of. The officers of the NCAA, the people who run the show, the people who decide, the officers, the board, the people who decide whether Jim Boeheim was going to continue as a basketball coach and under what circumstances, and who will decide whether Rick Pitino will, and under what circumstances, and what Syracuse's punishment was, and what Louisville's punishment might be. These people, the officers and the board of directors, none of them are full-time employees, workers, participants with the NCAA. They all have outside jobs. They do this as sort of a hobby on the side. How the hell can these people who are on, who are running the NCAA, put the proper time in, et cetera? I don't care who they hire to investigate. It takes time and a lot of reading and a lot of effort to go through these things. And they don't do it, and yet they punish people dramatically for what they perceive as wrongdoing, because they should have known, even if they didn't know, they were in the number one position. Let me tell you something. College basketball, college football is big stuff. Rick Pitino makes over $4 million a year. That's what Louisville pays him. Poor Jim Bay, I mean, he only works for, I think, $1.2 million a year. That's big money. And the colleges make hundreds of millions of dollars off of college sports today, especially if you're a good team. And Louisville and Syracuse generally are. You're on national television twice a week. The TV stations pay big dollars, mega dollars, to the universities to be on their station. And these coaches generally put out a good team every year, a top 20 team, a top 10 team, sometimes number one team. And they don't get punished. The university will lose a few games. They won't be counted. Nobody gets punished here but the coach, because he should have known even if he didn't know. All the other things they said, it just confuses me, and I believe it is an unfair situation. Where are we going next? I'm going after the Catholic Church a little bit, and I'm falling away Catholic, but that isn't why I go after them. I believe in God. I love God. I love my church. I just can't go back until the church straightens itself out. It's not for me to straighten myself out. And apparently a lot of people think my way, because during my youth, the churches were packed. Today, churches are closed, and they're empty on Sunday. Okay? Here's what happens. We're having a synod in Rome again. We had one last year. Meeting of bishops from all over the world, cardinals and bishops, to look at a certain phase of the church's law. Pope Francis says we're going to look at the family and the family problems, and that's what we're looking at right now. Well, turns out the German bishops and the United States bishops do not agree. Each country has a conference of bishops. We have the United States Conference of Bishops, and we have the Germany Conference of Bishops. And as it turns out, the German bishops, I think, are thinking straighter and better than the U.S. bishops. We're talking about remarried Catholics and whether they can receive the sacrament of Holy Eucharist. You see, when you go to church, you can go to communion, and we believe it's the body and blood of Jesus Christ when we go to the altar for communion. Well, if you're divorced, you can't go to communion. Priest knows he has to refuse you communion. You have to understand, those people who do go to church, they're diehard Catholics. And just about everyone goes to communion at the time of communion. They get up, they stand in line, they go up to the priest, and they have they receive communion. Well, can you imagine you're the only person in the church who's sitting there that doesn't get up and get in line, or there are two or three of you, and you can't get in line because you can't receive the sacrament because you are divorced. See, the way the church looks at this, or the American church, the American bishops, adultery is a sin. Thou shalt not commit adultery. Okay, it's part one of the Ten Commandments. And they say if you're married, it's okay to have sex. Now you're divorced. And let's assume you get remarried. Well, you're committing adultery, because you can only get married once in the Catholic Church. It doesn't count, number two. And so you're an adulteress or an adulterer, and therefore you can't receive the sacraments. Well, Pope Francis and the German bishops say, I don't know if that's what God meant. God says love everyone. What about homosexuals? You know, gays. God says love everyone. And we're taking this group of people, woman might be divorced for no reason of hers, and we're shoving her aside. And we're stigmatizing that woman or that man. So what happens is this. Both are men of God, German and American bishops. Yet they're holding diametrically opposed positions on the issue. And the fault, from my perspective, why is this happening? The difference in opinion. These are bishops, cardinals, big men in the church. They know everything about God. is man's interpretation of the Bible. The Bible is supposedly God's word. But yet, some of those words have to be interpreted to know what they mean. Look at the United States Constitution. We're interpreting it all the time. Same thing with the Bible. The problem is, it's not God interpreting what he says. It's men. They may be priests, but it's men who are interpreting the Bible, and they can come up with different opinions, and they may not necessarily each be correct. Two priests can have opposing views on what the words in the Bible mean. This problem, man's interpretation, is screwing everything up. It's not the word of God that's in trouble. It's man's interpretation of what it meant. And the United States bishops hold everything in the Bible to a strict interpretation. They're all scalias from the United States Supreme Court. They believe the Bible, what the word says, must be strictly enforced. You know, don't spill your seed on the ground. That means you can't masturbate. That means you can't be a homosexual. They interpret that from don't spill your seed on the ground if you're a man. And this problem exists with the Muslims. They have the same problem with the Quran, because what it's being interpreted today may not have been what Muhammad meant back in the 600 ADs. And the Torah, the Jewish Torah, same thing. And the problem is arising with man's interpretation. The German bishops are going with the Pope. They're more liberal. The U.S. Bishops are hard-ass, and they're staying with the dogma that I believe, the men's interpretations that have assisted in bringing down the Catholic Church to the point it is today. All right, where are we going next? Oh, Lincoln, Abraham Lincoln. How's this? Change of pace. My column this week in Conk Life, and the newspaper hits the stands tomorrow, is titled Lincoln the Man. Lincoln the Man. Now, Lincoln the Man, I'm not talking about things we knew. I'm talking about things we might not know about Abraham Lincoln, things we might not know, personal things. We all know he was born in a log cabin. He was a Republican, the 16th president of the United States. He saved the Union. He freed the slaves. He delivered the Gettysburg Address, and he was assassinated. There are things we don't know which affected his life in one way or another, sometimes for 50 years. He was a licensed bartender, 22 years old, all right? And by serving alcohol was considered no problem when this all happened to him in 1833 when he was the bartender. 1833, and he was 22 years old. Everybody drank in Illinois. It was the way society ran itself. This was a frontier town. They were all boozers, and nobody worried about it. Nobody complained all over the United States. We're a young country, a drinking country. Yet by the time he ran for the Senate in 1858 and president in 1860, a temperance league had come into being and had grown, and drinking alcohol was a major issue in both elections, and each time he had to defend his position as a licensed bartender, and the story's interesting what was behind it. Also, he himself was not a drinker, by the way. He was a bartender. He didn't touch alcohol. He advocated the vote for women. I didn't know that. He advocated the vote for women in the 1860s, that early. He was a sloppy dresser. Well, most of us know that from looking at his pictures. He didn't care. He didn't care about his appearance. A suit was to be worn to cover his body, period. He rarely combed his hair. That's why his hair is all rumpled all the time in pictures. He didn't smoke. He didn't chew tobacco. He did not use tobacco. This guy didn't drink, and he didn't use tobacco at all, neither to smoke or chew. This is interesting. He was not a gun user. He never carried a gun or shot one. Never carried or shot a gun, even when hunting. And the final thing that I cover, and was something I wasn't aware of either, and I think is very touching, and you have to put it all in perspective based on the time period it happened, ages, etc. He was in love with a woman by the name of Ann Rutledge, very much in love with Ann Rutledge. They could not marry initially. Mary Todd isn't even in the thing yet. This is back in the 1830s, early 1830s. He didn't even know Mary Todd then. But he was in love with Ann Rutledge. She was from New Salem also. Typhoid came in. He was 31, 32. She was 22. She died from typhoid. Lincoln went into severe depression. He remembered that woman the rest of his life, as you will read from my article. So if you get a chance, read Lincoln the Man. You can also find it as of Friday morning. It is linked to my Key West Lou website. Moving on, Monsanto. I haven't talked about Monsanto in a long time, and GMOs, genetically modified organisms. It has been reported, and this doesn't surprise me. I've been talking about this for 3 years. I talked about this on my TV show 3 years ago, that Monsanto is buying college professors. Monsanto is a major corporation, GMOs, just like corporations buy our senators and congressmen, and I know you all agree with me. Most of them are bought. Well, they buy college professors. But it's coming to the forefront now. People are starting to realize it's in the media now, finally. Okay? Now, here's what's happening. Anyone comes up with an anti-GMO article, or there's a lawsuit that presents a position showing that GMOs are not healthy, right away, Monsanto, I'm just talking about Monsanto, not the other companies. They do it also, though. Monsanto immediately goes out and gets a college professor to write a thesis or a scientific paper opposing the premise being put forth that their product's no good. Now, each side has an expert. There were, you know, when I practiced law for years, environmental law, we had experts for everything in that. If you could pay the fee, you could find an expert. Hear what I'm saying? This is the nature of how things are done in this country. And so Monsanto's being attacked in court. They're being attacked in scientific publications. They hire a guy. They don't tell him what to write, this college professor. But the college professor knows if he writes it right, he's going to get a big fee. And even more important, he's going to get more jobs like this down the road. He'll make income far surpassing his college professor income. So it's gotten so bad that Monsanto has been described recently in an article as the puppet master of academia. Now, staying with, or where are we going on time here? Staying with Monsanto for a moment. Roundup. That's what they put on crops to kill the bugs, okay? And it contains glyphosate. Roundup has been barred in most Central and South American countries, legislatively and by court order. They've thrown Monsanto out of these countries, and you can't use Roundup. A lot of European countries have. 2 years ago, Putin said, no more Roundup, no more Monsanto, no more GMOs. If the United States wants to do it, fine. We are not going to do it. The only thing he's done that I agree with in recent years. Well, a two-year study out of Great Britain, Italy, and France that just was published August 25th, says the glyphosate in Roundup is a carcinogenic, causes cancer, and, okay, it can cause injury to people around it, people who are, you know, in the fields doing the planting, et cetera. And it's just sick. It can destroy kidneys and livers, this article said. And yet it's still out there. No one does anything about it. Companies in this country still sell the damn thing, and I got to call it the damn thing. Home Depot here in Key West sells it, and it's wrong. But we protect Monsanto in this country. Our laws are set up to protect Monsanto. I would go into that in more detail, but time is coming when the show is going to be over now. Thank you for joining me tonight. I hope I didn't offend any of you by the positions I took. I think this was one of my better shows, in fact, commenting on the things I did. Please join me again next week. I enjoy doing this, and I enjoy the fact that you are there listening. The show is archived on Blog Talk Radio and YouTube. I know most of you listen to me on Blog Talk Radio and YouTube. I wrote a book, The World Upside Down. The World Upside Down, you can find it on Amazon.com. If you like the show, buy the book. If you don't like the show, don't buy the book. You will not enjoy it. Thank you again. I look forward to being with you next week.